Good morning. It's 9 minutes after 7 o'clock here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Gene Purcell, filling in for Joy Cardine. Well, Bush bashing isn't just for liberals or for Democrats anymore. In their recent debate last week, the Republican presidential candidates finally brought up a name that they have been trying to avoid saying out loud, George W. Bush. However, it wasn't to praise him, but rather to criticize his presidency. And as a rule, the general population doesn't appear to have much love for the president these days either. In a recent AP poll, his approval rating is back down to its all-time low of 32%. But as some turn their back on the president, others say there is still much to admire. Our guest this hour is one of them. You can join the conversation as we take a look at how some people are no longer supporting the president, while others see somebody to admire. Where do you stand on this issue? Is the president somebody who is worth admiration, or are those poll numbers really reflective of where the American population is? You can call in with your thoughts, your comments at 800-642-1234. If you're calling from the Madison area, it is 263-1890. Our guest this hour to talk about this is Daniel Sir. He is a blogger for the conservative website, GOP3.com. And Daniel Sir, good morning.
Good morning, Gene. Great to be with you.
Well, it's good to have you along. Let's start with the big question, I guess. And, President Bush really took some hits at the Republican presidential debate last week. And I'm wondering, on the one hand, a lot of people say, well, the administration's sort of in a bad spot at this moment and so on. And then I got to thinking about it. Well, he's a lame duck. Is this just a natural? What's your view on that?
Well, certainly there's going to be some loss in influence, I guess we'll say, just because he is a lame duck. But you have to remember that he's still the president, and he still has all of the constitutional powers of the presidency. Wisconsin just saw an example of that this week, that he got to appoint Mark Green as our new U.S. ambassador to Tanzania. That's the case whether your approval rating's 32% or 82%. So he's certainly still got a lot of that constitutional power, and he's going to keep exercising it.
He does have a lot of power, and there's no doubt about that. And I'm wondering, I want to talk to you personally for a second here. How has your view of the president evolved, or has it not evolved? Have you started out with a lot of admiration? Right where you are now. Did you start out with low expectations? You've seen a lot more that you liked, how has your personal journey been?
I'm sticking with the president. I'm sure we'll talk about the news of the week later on in the show. Mm-hmm. But if you take a step back, consider these three big facts. There's not been a terrorist attack on United States soil since September 11, 2001. Second, our economy has shown sustained growth the last few years. We've got low inflation and low unemployment. And third, just last month, two Bush-appointed justices were key votes on the Supreme Court upholding the partial birth abortion ban that President Bush had signed. So, yeah, there have been some frustrations, there have been some stumbles the last couple years, but I elected a president that was going to cut taxes, keep America safe, fight for a culture of life, and that's basically what I've got.
How do you explain the 32% approval rating right now?
Obviously, people are frustrated the war in Iraq is going. I think the couple months ago, the president said, if he got asked, do you approve or disapprove of how things are in Iraq, he'd say he disapproves. Certainly, we all share that sentiment, but that doesn't mean that we need to cut and run and get out either.
On Iraq, that's the word that's come up a couple of times right now. And if you took Iraq out of the equation, and it's hard to do, I understand that. But if you took Iraq out of the equation, the things that you cited as successes, no terrorist attacks since 9/11, growth in the economy, those sorts of things, this could be a very successful president. And those ratings might all change. Where does Iraq fit into all this?
Certainly, it's the predominant issue if you talk to people about issues. But I think, the Iraq war and perhaps the broader war on terrorism is different to the extent that it's not a war that's kind of consuming the national attention. You talk about wars of the past, certainly world wars, but even, Korea and Vietnam, those were the centerpiece, the fixture of national attention, and that's what we worried about every day. We wondered how the battle was going every day. And in Iraq, I don't know that people pay that kind of, tied to the tube kind of attention that we once had. And as a result, I think they're less inclined to support it because they see less of the daily results on the ground that we're getting.
And at the same time, yeah, they don't see a lot of results. I guess that's kind of the key. And as the president's ratings, you know, are directly affected by Iraq, is there anything that you think he can do? I mean, should he change any of his methods right now in handling that in public? Should he stay the course? How do you think he's been putting the public face on it?
Well, certainly the surge is the big part of our Iraq policy right now, and I think everybody's just kind of come to a common truce on the matter that we're just going to wait until September, and we're going to see if the surge worked or not. Certainly that's been General Petraeus' plea to Congress and the American people, and I think at least politically everybody's kind of come to that consensus that we're going to do the surge. You know, once we got the Iraq war funding bill through without a deadline, that we were just going to not do a deadline, we're going to fund the troops, and we're going to let the surge work. And, you know, hopefully come September, we'll see that the violence has been down over the course of summer and that it has worked, and then we can start bringing those troops back home.
As you look at the poll numbers, as you talk to other Republicans, if 32% of the population is supporting the president right now, there's a lot of Republicans in there somewhere who don't support the president. And I'm wondering, you know, among your circle of friends, if you've seen, you know, some people, I don't want to, defecting is not quite the right term, but, you know, that all of a sudden they were supportive and all of a sudden they're not.
Yeah, absolutely. There's been some frustration. You know, conservatives have, I guess the two big frustrations have been immigration, obviously, and spending. I think everybody agrees that the spending we've been doing on the domestic side of things, especially in Washington, D.C., for the last, you know, from 2000 to 2006, was pretty out of control. And the American people, you know, made us pay a price for that when they voted us out of office last November. Iraq was certainly an important consideration for them, but I think a lot of it was Republicans kind of lost our brand name as the fiscally responsible party. And so we lost some moderate voters who had trusted us in the past to be the people who held the line on spending, who were responsible with the budget. And then there are conservatives on the other end that are really conservative who have just said, you know, I'm putting up my hands on this president. But I think the bulk of the Republican Party base is still going to stay pretty loyal.
And we're going to continue our discussion right after this break. Daniel Suhr is our guest, blogger for the conservative website, GOP3.com. And we'll be inviting your calls. I'm Gene Purcell in for Joy Cardine here on the Ideas Network. It's 18 minutes past 7 o'clock. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Gene Purcell in for Joy Cardine. Coming up after 8 o'clock this morning, stick around for the Week in Review, and we'll take a look at the week that was here on Wisconsin Public Radio. This hour, Daniel Suhr is our guest, a blogger for the conservative website, GOP3.com. And as President Bush's ratings continue to fall, currently at about 32% in the general population, and we're also seeing some response now, too, actually, from other presidential candidates, Republicans specifically, who are publicly saying that they're not big fans of the president in terms of the way he's been doing his job. We're finding out what you think and what our guest thinks as well. If you'd like to join in, 800-642-1234. In Madison, it is 263-1890. Daniel Suhr, before the break, we were talking about some of the issues that you have with the president and the president's administration, specifically regarding immigration and spending. And one of the things you brought up, you used the word brand in terms of the Republican brand. And earlier this week on this program, we did a show on branding of the GOP. And I'm wondering if the president has played a role in that. There is a proposal, as you know, the Republican Party needs to be, quote, rebranded, you know, sort of taken back and to kind of figure out what it really stands for. And I'm wondering if that has really changed or if the administration has parted ways with what, you know, traditional, I guess, Republicans, conservatives might think.
No, I think that the core Republican brand that says, you know, we believe in smaller government and tax cuts and fiscal responsibility, that says we believe in a strong national defense, a strong homeland security, and that says we believe in a culture of life and personal responsibility, that brand is just as solid as ever, I think, with the American people. We've just kind of parted ways with it at some points. And, yeah, some of that falls with the president. I think perhaps his great contribution to the Republican brand will be the compassionate conservatism. I know it's kind of a tarnished term right now, but the idea that, those goals, particularly the personal responsibility end of it, are not incompatible with being a nation that's compassionate about its poor here at home and abroad. Just this last week, we saw an instance of that with the president's AIDS spending package and doubling the amount of money we spend fighting AIDS around the globe. So that's probably his unique contribution adding to the brand. But the core ideas that this party believes in are just as strong as ever. And you go out and spend time with people at the grassroots. You go to Republican Party caucuses on the county level, you'll still hear people, you know, getting up there and talking about those good old tax cuts from 2001 and 2003 and how good the judges have been the last couple of years.
We're going to continue with our look at some of the other issues facing the president in a few minutes, but right now let's find out what listeners think. Debbie joins us, and Debbie is in, looks like, St. Croix County. Hi, Debbie.
Hi.
Good morning, Debbie.
Good morning. I just wanted to make just a comment. I worked for the Republican Party years ago, and I fell away from that very quickly. The 9/11 happened under President Bush's watch. He then said that he was not going to start the draft, and then he said that there were weapons of mass destruction, and then he said, I have no intention of leaving Iraq. And I think one real question that should be addressed that is not is, where is the money going to? Who are we fighting over there? Where is the money going to? Why aren't these people adequately defending themselves with the right kind of rifles when they're over there? And basically follow the money. And I think that if that's the case, if that's the most important thing to look at, then there should be held responsible as to explaining to the American public where the taxpayers' money is going to for FEMA, et cetera.
All right, Debbie, I think we've got it there. Lots of questions in there, Daniel, sir. But, you know, she began with 9/11, and you referenced that before. No terrorist attacks have happened since 9/11. And, you know, it really was a defining moment, not just for the country, but for the Bush administration. And, you know, in the days and weeks that followed 9/11, the popularity of the president was really sort of just so unbelievably high. And since then, there has been a change. As you point out, no terrorist attacks. What was good about the way he handled 9/11 in your estimation? And has anything changed since then in the way he's been handling things?
I think it's just the price of success to some degree, Gene. You know, the fact that we haven't had another terrorist attack since then has meant that it's kind of faded from people's minds. That doesn't mean that the people in the intelligence community and in the law enforcement community aren't out there every day, you know, working their tails off to make sure that this doesn't happen again, to keep us safe. And, you know, I'm just so thankful that they do that, and certainly we've seen, you know, glimmers of the results of that when we see the bust at Fort Dix, for instance. But I think for every, you know, time that we catch the bad guys on Fort Dix and everybody hears about it in the news, there are probably 10 times that it happens that we never hear about it. And because of that, I don't think the administration gets the credit that it rightly deserves for what it's done to keep the American people safe.
Debbie's other points were sort of tied up in Iraq and tax money, you know,
right.
And a lot of people in Iraq, when they talk about Iraq, or when I heard her mention FEMA, so she may have been referring to Hurricane Katrina.
Mm-hmm.
But the questions are, you know, is the tax money that is being spent, is it being spent wisely? Are the correct decisions being made and that sort of thing? And what do you think about that? If you look at what happened with Katrina, there are big questions about money in Iraq. Is that the president's fault? Is there are larger issues there that are out of his control? What's your take on that?
Yeah, you know, Debbie, I'd agree with you that we absolutely have to be you know, careful in watching how the taxpayers' money is spent. I think that's core to what we believe as Republicans. And you know, one of the things we've seen in Iraq is the use of contractors in a way that we haven't before, in providing everything from, you know, the food the troops eat to security for the American ambassador. You know, he has a private security force that are his bodyguards. So we've seen contractors used in a way in war that we've never seen before. And I think that that's been good, but I think there's also probably been more waste there than we know about. Congressman Sensenbrenner from here from Wisconsin, from the 5th District, during Katrina said, you know, if we're going to spend all this money on emergency aid, we really need a special inspector general, a special watchdog, to make sure that that money is spent wisely. And at the time, the Democrats criticized him for it. They went after him, saying he was, you know, being cruel and insensitive. And I think it was absolutely the right thing. We need to get out there and say, we're going to spend money where it counts. We're going to do what it takes to keep our troops safe in Iraq. We're going to do what it takes to take care of citizens who need help here at home. But we're going to do so in a fiscally responsible manner.
When President Bush took office, there was much talk, much discussion about, you know, his business background. And he was going to be the type of person who surrounded himself with experts who knew how to get the various jobs done. And since then, you know, the 9/11 happened. There have been a lot of changes. And then a lot of the people that he did surround himself with, Donald Rumsfeld might be an example of that. You know, a lot of people say that he stayed too long, that the president should have cut him loose a little sooner, and that could have changed all sorts of things. And you see other examples of that throughout the administration. That business person persona that he brought to the White House, has that been adequately carried out to your satisfaction?
Yeah, I mean, you got to remember, this guy's got an MBA from Harvard, and he's the first MBA president. As to the question, you know, I think it's certainly reflective in his management style, how he runs the executive branch, that he sets the vision, he tells people where we're going to go, and then I think he's probably pretty hands-off with how he manages the staff. There's a book by a UW professor a couple years ago on this topic that got into it pretty well, and he said, you know, he decides what the priorities are, he decides what the goals are, and then he's probably not quite as hands-off as Ronald Reagan was, but he's certainly not going to be a Jimmy Carter-style micromanager either. And that's allowed him to surround himself with those good people. I'd still say he does. You know, you look, Don Rumsfeld left, yes, but Bob Gates, our new Secretary of Defense, has really done a great job in a tough situation so far. I think everybody agrees he brought a lot of, you know, a former CIA director, president of Texas A&M University, who's just the right kind of person for that job. And so far he's done a great job, I think.
Has that hands-off style served him well?
Yeah, I guess I would probably say so. I would say it has allowed him to travel, certainly, that he's been able to get out there, and he's particularly doing it this second term, I think, spending more time abroad, knowing that he's got good people here at home. Sometimes it probably is problematic. Certainly the U.S. attorney's thing for the last couple of months hasn't gone well for the administration. I think everybody acknowledges that. But on the whole, you know, President Bush won in 2004 because people perceived him as a strong leader. They knew where he stood. They knew what his principles were. And even if they didn't necessarily agree with him, they decided that they would rather than have that.
And I'm afraid we have to leave it here. We've got a break, but we'll pick it up when we return.
Sounds good, Gene.
We're talking about President Bush here on WPR. It's 25 minutes before 8 o'clock. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Gene Purcell. I'm in for Joy Cardine this week. We're talking about the popularity of President Bush, not just in regards to the general population, but kind of playing off what happened earlier this week in the Republican presidential debate, where the candidates who are running for the Republican nomination, a couple of them took shots at the president. That hasn't really happened before, at least not within Republican ranks. And now we're just talking about the effects of that. Daniel Sir is our guest today. This hour, he is a blogger for the conservative website, GOP3.com. If you'd like to join in, 800-642-1234. Let's go straight to listeners right now. And Joe is with us, and Joe is in Manitowoc. Good morning.
Morning. I would like to just ask two quick questions. The first is, the, a lot has been talked about with the money that was sent to Iraq initially and the large sum of cash. The first question with that would be, why did we send a large sum of cash to Iraq? What good is, you know, greenbacks going to do in a country that was based off of a totally different currency? It just doesn't make a whole lot of sense that we'd actually send a lot of cash over there in the first place.
Okay.
That'd be the first one.
Well, just quick, Joe, I would say, you know, a lot of that money has ended up in the hands of American contractors. You know, it's American or other international companies that are building the hospitals, that are building the roads, that are building up the oil refineries. We've got the contractors who have the special knowledge required to do that. So I think a lot of that money, while it's being spent in Iraq, is actually being spent to benefit U.S. companies. You know, we rail on Halliburton, but I think that's a great example of an American company, an American employer that we're, you know, sending over there to do work to build the infrastructure for the Iraqi people.
And, Joe, your second question, is it related to the popularity of the president?
Kind of, I guess. This is a quick follow-up of the first one, though. I guess that still is an answer. We actually sent cash there. They have bank accounts in America. Not like the guys from Halliburton contractors are going
to get. Okay, Joe, I hate to cut you off and get in a discussion about cash, but we are trying to stick to the subject, and I realize that plays a role in it. But we are trying to talk specifically here about the popularity of the president, and while that may play a role, I'm not sure it is directly related to this particular conversation. Let's move on to Scott, who joins us from Columbus. Good morning, Scott. Hello, Scott?
Yes.
Hi, you're on the air.
Okay, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Yes, there was a little delay. The statement has been made many, many times, and I heard it constantly in the major media before the 2006 elections in the lead up, that there was no terrorist attack after 9/11. This is patently untrue. The anthrax attacks shut down the federal government temporarily.
Yeah, that's
they killed six people, including two federal employees. Even with the widely expanded investigative powers, law enforcement powers of the Patriot Act, there has not even been an arrest, let alone conviction in those attacks. If I were a terrorist, I would say that that was a very successful attack post 9/11.
Scott, thanks for the call.
Yeah, and I'll cede that one to you, Scott. That's a good point.
And, you know, Scott's point does bring up sort of the whole issue of the war on terror, as it's called. You know, it's interesting because I'd almost forgotten about that, and as soon as Scott brought it back up, I remembered it. And there's been a lot of money spent, a lot of effort put, and I'm not sure that the American public is seeing results from that. And I'm wondering, Daniel, sir, if that plays a role in all this as well.
Well, I think we're seeing results to the extent that we're not seeing anything. You know, yeah, we're spending, you know, we've got the new Department of Homeland Security. We're spending money on these law enforcement agencies. But by and large, I think they've kept us pretty safe. I think they've done the job. Have we expanded the investigatory powers of the FBI and other federal law enforcement agencies with the Patriot Act? Absolutely. Has that resulted in, you know, a basically safe country where even though we've got these radical jihadists who are pressing in on us, you know, we've been able to crack some of the cells here that we know about. I'm certain there are many more instances that we don't know about where the FBI has used those powers to go in there and stop the bad guys. Absolutely.
800-642-1234 is our toll-free number. In Madison, it is 263-1890. What do you think about President Bush's popularity? Is it sinking for a reason? Do the other Republicans who are taking shots at him now in public, are they doing it simply because it's politically convenient, or do they really believe what they say? 800-642-1234. Don joins us now, and Don is in New Auburn. Good morning.
Yeah. When a guy says this man has an MBA, you know, there's no group of terrorists in the world that could have created a $20,000 debt for each family in the United States. And this man has murdered hundreds of thousands of human beings with his policies. And he's continued to defend the Israeli policy of the occupation of the Palestinian people, which has been the most cancerous effect in the Middle East that you could possibly have. Why don't they stop that? And this continues now. Sadr or whatever it is, he says that we should move out of the country. He's one of the leading spokesmen for the government. Why don't we listen to the people over there? We had no reason to go over and murder and kill them people in the first place. They had nothing to do with 9-1-1. Why do we continue killing them? And if you want to talk about the effects of terrorism, well, we're trying to kill them. The terrorists are trying to kill us. They're killing American boys every day. And the people that are cooperating with us because of this absurd attitude that we've inflicted upon the world.
Well, I think that's part of the point, though, Don. Part of the point here is that Iraq is the battleground. You said it exactly. The terrorists are over there, and they're attacking our American troops because they hate us. But part of the reason, you know, the president says we need to stay in Iraq is because Iraq is where the terrorists are at. We need to go play offense. We need to be where al-Qaeda is, and we need to take the battle to them. And if al-Qaeda is in Iraq, then they're attacking American soldiers there, then we need to stick it out and fight it there. Because if we're not fighting al-Qaeda in Iraq, they will follow us home. If we pull our troops out, they will come back, and we will rue that here on American soil. And I'll say, secondly, you're right. The president has been a strong defender of Israel. And for those of us on the conservative side of the spectrum, I would say that's another reason, you know, the 32% that still approve. I would say one of the big ones for evangelical Christians is that this president has been a strong friend to Israel. And I certainly don't apologize for that. I congratulate him on it.
Don began talking about the debt, and he used a $20,000 debt per family figure. I don't know how accurate that is. But the debt has turned into an issue, I think, for the country, and a lot of it has happened under President Bush's watch. You've talked about that briefly. Is that drifting down, do you think, to, you know, so-called traditional Republican ranks?
Well, actually, I think, you know, we've seen increased spending, yes, but we just saw a report out this week from the OMB, the Office of Management and Budget, that we're going to they're scaling back the deficit projections, that we're going to have a smaller deficit than originally forecast, and that's because of this president's strong pro-growth economic policies. When we cut taxes in 2001 and in 2003, and again in smaller ways since then, we help set loose that entrepreneurial spirit that is just inherent in the American people. And, you know, we've reduced regulation, and we've gotten government off of the back of business to at least some extent. And so we've got innovators out there and small business people, and they're creating jobs. And as our economy grows then, our tax revenues grow. So it's kind of just the basic Laffer curve that if we reduce taxes enough, that our economy then grows, it ends up coming back to us in tax revenue. So the deficit is falling thanks to the president's strong pro-growth economic policies.
We've got time for a quick call from Alex, who joins us in Wauwatosa. Good morning.
Morning, Alex.
Hello, Gina. Hello to the guest. The guest is doing a great job defending the president, and if I were the guest, I would do that too. But if things are so good, then why are things so bad? I think the president actually did receive terrible advice, especially during his first term. And number two, I think after 11 September, for some reason, he couldn't rally the people, the, you know, Joe and Jay and Cheesehead behind the war effort. I think if he were able to do that more effectively, I think things would be a little bit different now, and there'd be much more support of the war. The last thing is I was always concerned about the president's either-or kind of personality and thinking, you're either for me, you're against me, I'm right, you're wrong. Yes, no, there doesn't seem to be any room in between. Yes, this is good for the country because somehow I know it and you don't. And I just don't think that's set well with many of us here in the country. And I'll get off and listen on the telephone.
All right.
I mean, radio.
Okay, we got it. Thanks, Alex. And
yeah.
Daniel, I'm going to take a break here, but
okay.
I've got each of the points written down and we'll return
too.
To them. So great. We're in good shape. Daniel Suhr is our guest, a blogger for the conservative website, GOP3.com. And we are talking about the popularity of President Bush this hour here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 12 minutes before 8 o'clock. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio, and I'm Gene Purcell. Coming up after 10, one man's breathtaking journey from blindness to sight. That's coming up with Kathleen Dunn after 10 o'clock. This hour, we are talking about the popularity of President Bush, particularly among Republicans. Our guest is Daniel Sir, the blogger for the conservative website GOP3.com. And Daniel Sir, before the break, we heard from Alex in Wauwatosa, who had some points he wanted to bring up. And the first was that Alex felt that the president, particularly during his first administration, received what he called terrible advice from some of the people around him.
You know, Alex, that may be your opinion, but I think it's worth noting who those advisors giving out that advice were. You know, Colin Powell was a highly decorated general. He was the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff during the Persian Gulf War. Don Rumsfeld was on his second tour as Secretary of Defense. He had been a highly successful business person. Dare I say the name, Dick Cheney was a former Secretary of Defense. He was a White House Chief of Staff for Ford. And, you know, he was added onto the ticket because he brought that gravitas, if you'll remember the term that was bandied about when he got added. And then Condoleezza Rice had been senior director on the National Security Council. She'd been a provost at Stanford University. So you may say it was bad advice, but when people were looking at then-Governor Bush in 2000, you know, he had a couple press conferences where he lined up Henry Kissinger, Colin Powell, Don Rumsfeld, Dick Cheney, and he said, these are the people who are going to do my foreign policy. And, you know, everybody said, yeah, this is the team we want in charge.
Alex's other points regarded the president and rallying the country after 9/11. And I think everyone agrees, or most people would anyway, that out of the first few weeks and months, he was good. But, you know, somewhere he lost some steam.
He lost some steam, certainly. But, you know, it carried him through the 2004 election. And that's what I would point out to you, Alex, is, you know, Jill and Jane and Joe Cheesehead may not be all enthusiastic about the Iraq war right now. But, you know, before 2004, he certainly rallied a majority of the American people to his cause, that this was important, that we needed to go in there to defend our country. And he convinced a majority of the United States House of Representatives, including prominent Democrats, and he convinced a majority of the United States Senate, including, you know, at the time, John Edwards and Hillary Clinton. And so, yeah, I think the president rallied folks, and it got him reelected in 2004.
And Alex had some issues with what he calls the president's either-or personality, where, you know, you're sort of either with us or against us. And do you see that? I mean, I think a lot of people do. And what do you think on that? I mean, is that the sign of a strong leader, or is that the sign of someone who doesn't see a lot of gray area?
Well, certainly I think the president knows what he stands for. And he's not ashamed of what he stands for. And sometimes might that come across as a little hard line? Yeah, it may come across that way. But I think more people appreciated that than didn't, and that's part of the reason he got elected in 2004. And I'd say second, you know, when you're dealing with a global war against people that are really bad guys, that you know, the president uses the term evil, and I think it's accurate. Yeah, that's an either-or question. Either you're with the good guys and you believe in freedom and liberty and democracy and the rule of law, or you're with the bad guys and you believe that girls shouldn't be in school and they shouldn't be allowed to leave their homes without a headdress, and that we should be beheading people for crimes and a whole host of other super fundamentalist, radical jihadist ideology. That is an either-or question.
We heard from Michael in West Allis, who had called but couldn't stick around. He wanted to know why we, I guess here at WPR, are more worried about popularity than competence. And so I guess Mike sees this maybe as sort of an American Idol kind of thing, you know, how popular is the president? And, you know, can you separate those two things? Is popularity necessarily related to competence?
No, certainly popularity is related to the extent that the president has the influence in Congress to get his legislative agenda passed. And he's going to have a harder time on the Hill getting things done because he doesn't have the political capital to toss around. But, Yeah, you want to talk about competence. He's been a great custodian of the economy. We've got low inflation. We've got low unemployment. We saw 3.1% growth last year. We're going to see 3.1% growth next year. We're forecasted to see 3.1% growth the year after that. So, you know, you want to talk about the economy. I think he's been a pretty good custodian, and he's kept the country safe since 9/11. So you want to talk about competence. I think those are the two big issues we got to ask. Is the economy doing well, and is the country safe? And this president's done it.
So do you think there is too much focus on popularity? And, you know, sound clips like we heard from the other presidential candidates this hour, are they, you know, when you look at the polls, is it 32 or 33% or, you know, what former Governor Thompson said about the president in his portion of the debate earlier this week? I mean,
right.
Does that really matter in the scheme of things?
I guess I would say that it's disappointing that we kind of fixate on a couple of issues. You know, everybody just kind of talks about Iraq as such a predominant issue, and we fail to consider the broader policy agenda. You know, this week the president's going to veto the stem cell embryo destructive research bill. Missile defense at the G8 has been big. You know, free trade, as the president of Colombia is in the United States this week, it reminds us that the president has been an important advocate on free trade. And, you know, the budget is going to be a huge issue this summer as we see the Democrats pushing a budget that increases taxes and spending to an unacceptable level, although I would submit that any tax increase is pretty unacceptable. So I would say, yeah, we get consumed with sound bites, but those sound bites are just about such a small number of issues, and there's such a broad array out there where the president's doing, at least for as far as conservatives are concerned, is doing the right thing on stem cells. He's doing the right thing on missile defense. He's doing the right thing on free trade.
Let's head over to Appleton right now, and Mike joins us. Good morning, Mike.
Hey, Mike. Good morning. Morning. Your guest is going to have a problem with me because, you see, I'm conservative and Republican and probably to the right of most people. But, you know, this president prides himself on plain speaking.
Yeah.
And my suggestion to you guys in the Republican Party is then speak plainly. Don't talk about the war in Iraq. Talk about the war in the region. The problem is the region. And if we pull out and all of the consequences, if you speak plainly to the American people and tell them these are the consequences of our pulling out, then, you know, it's going to make things easier. And please don't say that, you know, the war was handled correctly in a competent manner, because it was not. It was handled totally incompetently. Now, going one last point, and going, you mm-hmm. know, with regards to the president's popularity, I think we should all breathe a huge sigh of relief that this immigration bill was stalled. And it's incredible that they try to shove this down our throats, something that was going to have huge consequences for the country. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's
Yeah, I'll agree with you, Mike, on immigration. I think this was kind of a, you know, Rudy Giuliani used the term mess to describe the bill, and I think that's probably accurate. Certainly it had some good things about securing the border, building a fence, more Border Patrol agents, but particularly the Z visas were a real problem for those of us on the right, and I'll totally agree with you there. As far as competence, I'd say, you know, he's been competent to the extent that we've kept the homeland secure. I'll join you in saying that the war in Iraq has been mishandled. But your first point is one I'll totally second the notion that we've got to talk about the consequences of pulling out for the region. Dan Senor, who was in Baghdad for a couple of years, had a great op-ed in Tuesday's Wall Street Journal. I think you can still pull it off opinionjournal.com. Where he went to, or he pulled quotes from like Brent Scowcroft or Anthony Zinni, people who opposed going into Iraq in the first place, and they said, you know, probably shouldn't have gone in, but now that we're there, we have got to stick it out, because if we don't, it will be genocide, it will be total chaos, it will be civil war, it will draw in Jordan, it will draw in Turkey, it will draw in Iran, it will destabilize some of the other governments in the region, and we just got to stick it out, because this may not be going great, but the consequences of leaving are just really, really bad. So, yeah, we're talking about a regional conflagration if we just cut and ran now. Absolutely, Mike.
We only have about a minute left, and I hate to drop this one in your lap, but, you know, Mike is an example, though. I mean, you know, he described himself as a conservative, as a Republican,
right,
to the right of most people, and yet he is concerned about the president's competence in some areas. How does the president win people like Mike back?
I think he's just got to stick to the core message. You know, last 18 months here is going to be his final shot at establishing his legacy. And if we continue to see the economy grow, if he stares down the Democrats, frankly, he's got to get out that veto pen. You want to win Republicans back, start using that veto pen. Hopefully we'll see that with the budget this summer, that some of those appropriation bills that the Democrats are going to pass are going to include a lot of new domestic spending. And the president's just got to stare him down and say, no, we're not going to increase domestic spending and we're not going to increase taxes. If he does that, if he stares the Democrats down and insists on a tight budget, I think that will be a good first step towards winning back a lot of the good folks like Mike.
Daniel Sir, thanks for joining us this morning.
Yeah, it's been my pleasure, Gene. Thanks so much.
Appreciate your time. Daniel Sir, a blogger for the conservative website GOP3.com. If you'd like a copy of this program, you can call the radio store at 800-747-7444. Have to get all the numbers in for that to work. Or else you can just go to our website. It's easier to remember at WPR.org. The hour was produced by Leo Duran today, and we had on-air production from Christina Taylor. I'm Gene Purcell. I'm in for Joy Cardine this week. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.